are a proud member of the 143 Podcast Network.
How's it going, everybody? This is Joey Galvez, and you are listening to the House of Indie Podcast.
This week, I have a great guest on the line. I have Greg Anderson. Ilise, how's it going, man?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. I always kind of stumble over your name. I hope I said it right.
You actually said it right.
Awesome.
a lot of people usually have to ask me right before, like, how do you say your name? But yeah, you got it.
Perfect, man. That's awesome. So you've done a few different things, and the one that everybody knows you about from is Nana, right?
Yeah, it's Nana the Were-Spider.
Yeah. So you know what? I've heard about this book so much. I've been meaning to grab a copy of my own, but man, I can't find it anywhere right now.
You should have let me know, man. Contact me. It's on my web, everything.
See, and that's probably why I haven't checked, because I have not gone to your website, but that's awesome. We'll drop all that stuff at the end, because I want people to be able to find it. When I see all my friends, they're always talking about this. I've spoken to a couple different people. You've had some people do some really cool stuff on that one as well. But you're coming out. You've got another one in Kickstarter right now as we speak, right?
Yeah. Literally just funded not too long ago.
Awesome. So it's completely funded?
Yeah, that's what it looks like. I haven't announced it yet, but yeah, I got the email and I looked at the campaign. I was like, oh, dope.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Well, I'm going to drop this episode. I already dropped an episode this week, but because you have this book coming out, and it's such a big, huge one, and I looked through the Kickstarter that you got there, and I was so excited about this one because it kind of touched home a little bit, man. Back in the day, I had a handful of friends who were like B-boys and B-girls and stuff like that. And we'd go to like hip-hop shows, and it was a big, huge thing back in the day, dude. And this one was really, really, really cool because there's a couple of things in here as well that kind of parallel what's going on in the world right now as well. So tell us a little bit about, it's not a, Showtime it's called, right?
Yeah. So, generally the series is Nana. It's based off the stories of Anansi the Spider, and, it follows his son. And what I like to do with the series is use it as a way to introduce people to more Black mythological gods and heroes, from various cultures. They could be from mythology, spirituality, folklore, and stuff like that, just to showcase that we have our own gods and heroes that we could also draw stories from. Because, you know, we're not really educated in school. It's usually European gods and fairy tales and so on and so forth. And with Showtime, I specifically wanted to focus on the coming of age aspect of the character, where he gets to finally meet kids his age and sort of bond, while also tackling aspects that is Black culture, such as hip hop and dance, and you know, a lot of that that break dancing type of stuff. So it still goes in line with what I'm trying to do with Is Nana and the context and themes, and the aspect of he ends up dealing with race for the first time.
Yeah,
you know, and I felt I finally needed to address the fact that he is. His form is of a Black kid, you know, even though he's a spider from his universe, but the fact that he looks like a Black kid, he's going to deal with the realities of racism. And, one of the unfortunate things was I actually wrote this script about 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
2-3 years ago. So, and it's unfortunate that, that those scenes is still insanely relevant with, literally what's going on right now.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. When I was reading this portion of the book, I gotta tell you, man, it hit. I don't want to say that it hit home, but it definitely got me. And I'm gonna tell the truth, man. I teared up reading that portion because we see this crazy stuff going on in the world right now, and it's completely unfortunate. It's unfortunate that we see this thing happening to people of color. Myself, I am a Mexican. I'm a Hispanic, and I've had things like this happen to me where I've been slammed to the ground. You know, after police ask me for my ID and I reach for it and they grab me and slam me to the ground, and it's absolutely crazy. But this is what is prevalent in the world, and it has never, it's always been there. And I don't want to get too far into this conversation, but it's been prevalent in our world and people of color for such a long time. And it's completely unfortunate, and racism, we have to face it. I've been, I've been a victim of racism since an early age. I was even, what's unfortunate for the form of racism that I endured was I got it from my own, Mexican culture and, people of who were not of color. So it's out there, man, and it comes in many different forms, and it's completely outrageous that it still happens today.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate, you know. I know when the whole situation with George Floyd happened, seeing how many of my peers, you know, mm-hmm. Really going through it. You know, a lot of us couldn't quite work because our minds we were just exhausted.
Yeah,
you know. And I feel like that's the thing that a lot of people, especially when they don't deal with it themselves, you mm-hmm. know, when they're very privileged, they don't really realize just how traumatic it is. Like, it stays in your head.
Yeah.
You know, it just builds and builds. It's like a growing tumor.
Yeah.
You know, and all the anxiety that comes with it, you know, like mm-hmm. I had to actually quit a gig that I had because I just felt like it was going on and the person just kept asking of so many things. It was just like, okay, you have no idea like what I'm dealing with mentally, dealing with all this stuff, you know. It's mm-hmm. just like, give me a break. You know, and I had to say peace.
Yeah. It's a huge thing that we have to deal with every day, and I frankly, I don't even know what the answer is to it. You know, I don't know how it's gonna go from here. I would hope to say that it would get better for everybody who's felt, you know, the brunt of racism. But I don't know how we can see what's going to be happening on the other side of that tunnel there. But why did you put it in this book? You wanted to show us, this portion of this book. Why was it so prevalent in your mind that you had to write about it?
Well, I feel like it's the reality of being, especially being a Black youth mm-hmm. in a city like New York City, you know. So it's implied, even though I don't really state it, but it's implied that this story takes place in New York City.
Okay.
And when you're having a group of Black dancers of dancers of color, mm-hmm. they deal with things on a regular, and even like the aspect of Showtime dancing. It's actually, these children, they're going against like the quote unquote law because they don't want you dancing on the trains. You know, they find all types of ways to say it's wrong, it's dangerous, but it's literally just kids dancing. Yeah. And you notice it's always Black kids dancing or kids of color. You know, I'm pretty sure they're around, but I've never seen a white child as a Showtime dancer, you know. So it feels like an unfortunate target against children of color, almost the same as when they would try to bring these laws trying to dictate the way a child of color should be dressing, mm-hmm. you know. And so I just felt like if he's going to be meeting a group of children of color and dancing with them and spending time, he's going to unfortunately deal with the realities of racism, mm-hmm. you know. And we know the situation with cops. They come in, a lot of them very privileged and using their power mm-hmm. as a way to one up somebody.
Yeah.
And I felt like it it made sense to sort of have Isnana deal with it, but also mm-hmm. with the fact that he's also an outsider. He has no idea what this is that he's dealing with, you know? And so when they have the conversation with him afterwards about mm-hmm. race, it's something that he has to process because he's never ever had to deal with anything like it, you know? And to the point where he's sort of, it's like we see it trickling in his head, but he's still not fully fathoming it. But then towards the end, you see how much it actually does play a part in how he views the world now a little bit. Mm-hmm.
And I think that kind of goes for all of us when we kind of witness something like that and we, you know, things like that kind of change our mind. But that's not the only kind of thing that you have in this book. You have some fun portions. You have some really cool stuff, some really, really awesome cultural type stuff. Can you speak on that a little bit about that in this book? I know in the first book, there's some really great stuff as well. But I want to know how you kind of threw that in here as well as kind of American culture as well, because now he's in New York.
Yeah, so it's you know, just like I said earlier, a lot of this series that I'm doing, I just like to cover a lot of aspects of just Black culture, mm-hmm. you know. So I'm always doing a lot of research on different aspects when it comes to folklore and stories and mythology and figures, and trying to figure out ways that I can bring them into the fold, mm-hmm. because I feel like me, I hope other Black people can learn these things, because we're unfortunately almost shielded away from learning about a lot of various Black cultures, you know, and yet it's our culture, mm-hmm. but it's like us finding strength and knowledge from it seems to be such a hindrance. And I want to sort of break that sort of that field that's standing in front of us with that. And hopefully that it builds interest in terms of this book. You know, I grew up in New York City all my life. You know, kids who speak like this. I have students who speak like this. I have students who I enjoy just watching kids be kids.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. It's funny because there are times when I'm with some of my friends and there's a group of kids just playing around and having fun. And sometimes they get like a, oh, my God, type of thing. But for me, it's like I get a lot of joy watching because I remember when I was their age doing the same thing and we weren't mm-hmm. bad. We was just kids expressing ourselves, you know, and I wanted the book to sort of be a tribute to those type of kids and a tribute to break dancers and even students that I've had, you know, because some of my students were who actually inspired the story.
That's awesome. Like back in the day, I wasn't a B-boy, but I grew up in California. And I grew up in a small farming town, and they didn't see a lot of people kind of, you know, doing anything different. So I liked a lot of skateboarding and punk rock. So I'm already a young Mexican boy who is already going against what his culture is by liking punk rock and being involved in that subculture and skateboarding and all that stuff. So already I'm getting kind of the brunt of some kind of racism from my own people who are like, you should be Mexican. You should act like it. You should listen to our music. You should be all about our culture, which I was. My parents spoke Spanish and we had the culture in our lives, but it was what I chose. I chose a subgenre to kind of, you know, express myself. And I got it from everywhere. And it's unfortunate that we see this in our lives where kids want to express themselves in a way instead of us kind of letting them do that and be creative. We have to kind of shut it down. And it's out there, man. And I find myself doing that too sometimes with my kids. And I stop and I think, oh man, this is what they were doing to me when I was their age. I need to chill out and I need to let my kids be expressive in their own way so that they can, you know, it's all about creativity and it's all about opening and expanding your mind a little bit and see what they can do with it. Was there something like that in your life when you were younger, where you expressed your way in a different way that, you know, maybe people didn't see that was right or wrong or something, like just kind of like what these kids here in Isnana?
Well, growing up, I definitely felt like an oddball within some of my friends or generally, I guess, some of the community that I was growing up with. And like, I was definitely into rock music. I was into the hard rock type of stuff. Mm-hmm. I dressed in all black. I went through my whole goth phase with the with the nails and the spikes. I was skateboarding before it became like a cool thing for black folks to do. Like, yeah. I definitely would get a lot of, you do know you're black, right? And I got it from white folks and black folks. Mm-hmm. And I remember when, after I had graduated high school and I came back, and because of Lupe Fiasco, he did a kick push, and he was mm-hmm. really pushing a lot of black folks doing, you know, skateboards and stuff like that. When I went back to my high school, and he had all these kids now with skateboards, and I was like, what the hell were y'all when I was here? You know,
I know.
So it's now, I feel like there's, over time, there's been seeing a lot more black kids being more expressive in what they wear and how they, and what they consume and stuff. So mm-hmm. it's been a lot of fun. Even me as an adult watching that, cause it just makes me feel good. Like it's a gradual process.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same, like, it's just cool for me to watch. But I definitely experienced a lot of that. Luckily I wouldn't say my parents had, tried to suppress some of it. Although as an adult, once in a while, I think I painted my fingernails black a few months ago, and my mom was like, oh my God, no, you know?
Yeah. There's definitely a little bit of that. I know back in the day, my mom, my parents were like, they wanted to suppress it a little bit, but now my mom's like all about it. She's always telling me, hey man, just let them, come on. Remember when you used to color your hair? Like, just let them be. I'm like, all right. And now I've become that parent that grown up who's like wanting to suppress it. Why are you guys being so weird, kind of a thing? And I'm like, oh man, I'm that freaking guy that says, get off my lawn. You know what I mean? All right, man, let's take a small break here. When we get back from the break, I need to know a little bit about your process, about your, how you go about creating this stuff. Because it's such a big, prevalent thing in the comic book community that I've got so many friends who's talked about your book, and I want to know why that is and how you go about it and how you create this. So when we get back, let's talk about your creative process.
Sounds good.
All right. And we're back, and I'm still talking to Greg here about Isnana. And, before the break, I wanted to ask you a question. I want to know your creative process. I know everybody out there is kind of dying. We already talked a little bit about your background and how you grew up and how all that good stuff. But I need to know how you go about creating something. Do you keep journals? Do you stop the car when you think of a story and just write it down, throw it in your phone? How do you go about this?
I definitely keep journals. Everywhere I go, I carry a notebook with me.
Awesome.
I have my phone as well. So if I get too lazy to even open up my bag, I'll go into my notes. I got my Google Docs ready. I got whatever way I can write, I do. My process, though, it's I write whatever excites me at the moment.
Okay.
You know, like sometimes I do have a gig that I have to be on schedule for a deadline, but even within those deadlines, I write whatever excites me at the moment, because mm-hmm. I've noticed some people, they get stuck when they try to write everything in the order of what they have in mind for their story. Mm-hmm. And to me, I like to keep it as exciting as I can. So I'll plot out some ideas that I have and maybe a slight spine or backbone, mm-hmm. but whatever scene, it's like, okay, this is, I want to write this dialogue, I want to write this action scene, I want to write this moment, I will focus on just that moment and write it out. And then afterwards, I will start piecing everything together like a puzzle until it gets to the structure that I actually want or feel like works. Mm-hmm. And I always tend to, I have like a couple of friends who I respect their opinions, who will give me honest feedback all the time. Even if they don't like something, if it's not working, they'll let me know. And then I'll try to see how I can probably rework it, but still keep in the essence of what I actually want to do. Mm-hmm. And also understand that not everyone is going to like everything that I want to do or understand everything. But after, I'd say I tend to write maybe 3 or 4, sometimes even 5 different drafts before I'm actually fully satisfied. And sometimes the draft, another draft or two, happens after the pencils come in.
And that's awesome, actually, because I've heard that a handful of people like to keep journals and stuff like that, and they have many different ways, and one thing doesn't work for everybody. Is there something that you do that works for you that you may think is kind of odd, or other people may think is odd, that would never work for them?
I definitely feel like the working out of order thing, because I've brought it up to a couple of people who told me they had writer's block, or they told me about the way they write. And sometimes it's just like, why would you do it that way? And honestly, it's just, I don't know. It just works very well for me, and to the point where I don't really experience a writer's block like that.
Okay.
You know, I have experienced writer's block in the past, but sometimes it goes right back to wanting to write what I want to write at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever excites me. And if I do feel a writer's block, I would just think of, all right, let me just focus on something else. So I'll just jump into something that excites me. Yeah. If it's reading or watching something that's similar to what I have in mind that I'm working on, maybe that can help add some juice to my brain. But aside from that, it's I don't fully think too much on what some people may think is weird. Because if it works for me and it seems like it's been working for me very well, then I'm just gonna keep doing what I do.
So how speaking on writer's block, how do you find yourself getting out of that? I know you said that you kind of just watch a couple of things that might kind of help you express yourself a little bit more. But is there like an exercise maybe that you do, or do you just, you know, stop all your projects and just kind of write something that, you know, just for yourself? Today I was looking through Twitter, and the reason why I'm asking this, I was looking through Twitter and somebody asked, hey, you know, creators, you know, show me some of your work that you've been working on that is not an intellectual property, that is not something that you've got on a deadline, but something that is fun that you've done just for yourself. And I don't know if a lot of people do that, because if they got work going on and they got deadlines and stuff, they're working on that. And I feel like sometimes maybe, you know, you kind of get in this rhythm of getting that kind of work out there. And you know, I know these creators, I know you do it for fun. Do you have to find yourself to kind of like step away from that every once in a while and kind of do something for fun?
Yeah. I mean, I try to have fun with almost everything that I do. Mm-hmm. You know, even if it's a hired work that I have to do, sometimes the work could be fun, but dealing with some of the people behind the scenes may take some of the fun out of it, you know. But for the most part, I try my best to say yes to a project if there's something in it that I feel like is very worthwhile for me and very creatively rewarding. You know, and I feel like if I get stuck, as I said, I just try to find something within that work that will excite me at the moment. Sometimes it could even just be, I'm going to pit these two characters together and just have them speak to each other. And I'll just have that dialogue running. Whether I use it or not, it doesn't matter. And I also don't write towards perfection. You know, I'm a perfectionist to a limit. Like, I know when to just say, all right, it's there, I'll leave it alone. But at the same time, I feel like a lot of mistakes show up, and those mistakes end up being very happy accidents.
Yeah, I hear that quite a bit. A lot of people talk about, you know, oh, there's been moments where I've written something and I really hated it, or I showed it to my editor and they're like, you know, work on this, you know, go off of this part because this is going somewhere, you know, and that could be something that you were like, that was that part that I was like, I didn't know that was going to go somewhere. They're like, no, do this, this, and this. And then it kind of changes the creator's mind. You're like, oh, okay, now I see where you're going and where you're coming from. That can work way better than what the idea that I had. And so I've talked to guys who've said that quite a bit. So I need to know, what else are you working on right now, man? I know you're working, you got this Kickstarter going on, but is there anything else that you're actually able to talk to us about?
What can I talk about?
I know I put you on the spot, man. My bad.
I got a couple of anthologies that I'm a part of. Okay. Some of them, like the titles of the anthologies, is slipping my mind right now.
It's all good.
But there is one that Matt Miner is the editor for. Okay. One of the head editors. I think it's called Better Tomorrow. I just sent the last draft of the lettering script to them. I think it was last night, which Ray Anthony Height is doing the art for, which looks amazing.
Awesome.
I am a part of that. Oh my God, what is it called? It's a noir anthology that Fabrice Sapolsky, who is one of the creators of Spider-Man Noir, that he's doing, which covers a lot of work for various black comic creators. Oh yeah,
it's that Kickstarter that he's doing where he's got tons of black creators on it, right?
Yeah, I'm one of them, man.
That's been awesome. In my email
asking me, Greg, where's your pitch? And I'm just like, I got it.
Yeah, he actually texted me a while back. He's like, hey, Joey, check this out. I've got this Kickstarter going on. And I was like, who's texting me from this weird number? And it's like, hey, Joey, it's Fabrice. I was like, oh, what's going on, man? I'm like, that's pretty freaking cool. Like this, I got a freaking text from Fabrice Sapolsky, man. How often does that happen, right? I mean, it probably happens to you guys a lot more, but I'm just a freaking podcaster, man. So I thought that was stinking cool. But yeah, he was like, check this out. I was actually trying to look for the text to give you the name of the book. Yeah, dude, that was a super cool project. I kind of want to check it out myself because I did back his one hit wonder and that should be in the mail very, very soon. And he was like, dude, check this out. You're going to love this. It's awesome. All kinds of really cool black artists and creators are going to be jumping on this. I love the idea. I'm on board. Once it hits, dude, I'm on board for this thing because I looked at through the names of the list of people who were on there. I was like, I have to, cause it's cool, man. I'm going to go freaking broke on these Kickstarters, dude.
No, I'm with you. Don't worry. It's not just you. It's me. It's a whole bunch of us. Like the last few days have just been me backing a couple people's projects. Unfortunately, I've been having to do only the PDFs because I've run out of space in my place, you know, and it's just like, this is a weird addiction that I have.
Dude, isn't it? I'm the same way. Like my wife the other day, she's like, my son brings in something from the mail and she's like, what did you kickstart now? I'm like, no, it's not that. I was like, and then I look at it, I was like, oh yeah, you're right. It's a Kickstarter that I did a few months back. But yeah, man, that's how it is. Like I got a freaking addiction too, dude. And that's why I started this show. Cause I was like, I got to talk to these people about this stuff. Cause I want to know a little bit about their background and how they go about this. I do want to ask you one last thing before we go into asking you about all your social media and where they can check your Kickstarter out and all that stuff. But before we go, what kind of advice would you give somebody who is trying to be successful where you've been successful in the comic book industry?
I would say just do a lot of research, do a lot of reading. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Look I'd say look at the ones that you do admire, see what they do, you know, read their works, try to gain some knowledge in what ways can you craft your own sort of work while staying true to who you are and your own, you know, skills. Even like looking through Kickstarters, just look through their campaigns, the way they structured everything, see exactly what works for them. Why do you have people coming, you know, to their page and so on and so forth. And a lot of it is just knowing to stand your ground, you know who you are, know what you want to tell, but at the same time, be adaptable.
That is some great advice. That's great, man. That's awesome. I found the text. he said the Kickstarter that features, it's 13 noir stories from 25 black creators. It's called Noir is the New Black. Sorry.
Yes. Noir is New Black.
Yeah. Yeah. So that one sounded really cool when he talked to me about it. I was like, dude, heck yeah, I'm on board with this one. Once it kickstarts, I'm all over it. 13 stories, 25 black creators. Noir is the New Black. So check that out. You're on this Kickstarter. You're on this book. So, and you got a laundry list of awesome, awesome black creators as well. So, I should have been prepared and looked up the names, but my bad. Anyway, man, Greg, I appreciate you coming on, hanging out with me, dude. Is where can everybody find your Kickstarters, your social media, your websites? What's on your websites? You know, all that good stuff. This is the time to drop your plug.
All right. Well, easy way to find this recent Kickstarter, just go on Google and type in "Is Nana the Were Spider Showtime." It should be the first link that you see. You'll be brought to the Kickstarter. For my web story, where you'll find pretty much everything is Nana, from the books, PDFs, T-shirts, trading cards. It's Webway. comics.ecwid.com. If you want to find me on Twitter, GREGANDELYSEE, and Greg Day DAE for IG.
Awesome, man. I appreciate you coming on, hang out with me, dude. This was a lot of fun, kind of knowing a little bit about your process and your background, dude. I didn't know that about you, that you were a skateboarder and got into some goth stuff, dude. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, man. It's funny. There's like no pictures of that, because that was like when I was in my grumpy, don't take a picture of me face.
Same here.
And now I regret it, because I'm like, yo, right. I wish I could show people.
Dude, I'm the same way. Like I tell my kids and my wife, they know that I was a punk rocker. Well, I'm still punk rock at heart, man. I just don't dress like that. But I was like, man, we barely took any pictures, because we were like, anybody who wanted to take our picture, we were like, no, get your camera out of my face. We don't want that. What the heck? And now I regret it, man, because I had some freaking cool hairstyles. I had some cool threads, dude. Unless I really wish that I would have had pictures of that part of my life.
Yep. Same here, man. Same here. So many regrets for that. But
right.
Live and learn, man.
Exactly. All right, man. Thanks for hanging out with me right here on the House of Indie. We'll talk to you next time. Everybody go out there, check out Is Nana Showtime on Kickstarter. Head on over to his website. Check it out. He's got some great stuff there. I'm telling you guys, you're not going to want to sleep on this one. I read through it. I looked through it. It's such a cool thing. Colors. We didn't get to talk about anybody else that was on the book, but awesome, awesome team you got going on this book as well. You know what? Go for it, man. Just drop everybody who's on the book really quick, just before we go.
Please. Yes, I appreciate that. So Miguel Blanco, man, we've been boys for a couple of years now. When I was looking for artists for this particular story, I knew I wanted somebody that was from the city, you know, who knew New York culture, who knew Philly. And he was like the perfect guy to jump on board. And he I sometimes try to make a deal with myself not to work with friends on certain projects, because I've had some really bad luck with that. But I'm very fortunate that things worked out with me and him when it came to this. Angel Davis Cooper, she came on board with the colors. It was the first time that we worked together, and we just had a great vibe, and she really added some wonderful dimensions to Miguel's Beatles, you know, like
killed it, really, it dude. Killed it on the colors, man.
Yeah, man. And it's I'm always hyping her up as much as I can on her messages, you know. We got Deron Bennett, who's like this freaking Eisner nominated freaking letterer, man. I love that guy. So freaking chill. He's the owner of End World Designs. So he's been freaking, I've been very fortunate to have him. He really adds those final touches.
Yeah.
We also have David Brame. Once again, I've worked with David on a couple of his novel stories. He does like a very short sort of bonus story. Mm-hmm. And he's freaking amazing. He's one of the most diverse artists that I've ever worked with. You know, he can do anything, and his layouts are amazing. And finally, we have Kari Randolph, who's like freaking Mr. Superstar. you know, from Excellence in Black, We Are Robin, Mosaic. He's been working for Marvel in DC forever. And he jumped on board to do the cover, and I was just extremely grateful for that.
That's awesome, dude. What a great team. And it definitely shows in this book. Everything from the colors to the letters to the story. All on point, man. Super cool. You guys got another one here.
Appreciate it, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, man, for hanging out with me here. We will talk to you guys next time. This is a really, really cool special episode. I'm going to drop this one at two in a week. So you guys are lucky. You're getting another one right here on the House of Indie. We'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Thanks again for listening to The House of Indie. My name is Joey Galvez, and I'll see you later.